All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bet by the Gemara. Oto Leman. And the Mishnah begins, Kishem Shamayim Bodkim Ota. Just like the waters check her, Kach Amayim Bodkim Oto. So too they check him. Who is the him that is being referenced in the Mishnah? There are two possibilities. The him is either her husband, or the him is the Boel. So the Gemara says, Oto Leman. Ilem Ola Baal. If you're talking about the husband, Baal Mai Ovid. What did the husband do wrong here that he should be punished or penalized with the Mesota affecting him? If he has a sin that is associated with him, that the waters check him out, what type of sin, Rashi says, that he had biyah with her after she already had kinui vistira, which is a violation of the isur of him towards her. So maybe then the waters will check him out. Wait a minute. If he did something wrong, now you're saying just like the waters check her, they check him. If he does something wrong, the waters don't check her. So then how can you say, oh, they also check him? Don't we have a braita? In an instance where the man has a clean slate, hamayim bodkim et ishto, then the waters work to check his wife. Eina ish menukeh me'avon, if the husband does not have a clean slate, eina mayim bodkim et ishto, then the waters do not check his wife. Ve'ela, what does it oto mean here? Laboel, that's that the perpetrator of the znut over here, that he will be subject to the same effects of the water as the woman herself. So Gemara says, Litnei Kedetani Seifa. Then why don't you frame it the same way we do in the next part of the Mishnah? Kishem Shasura the Baal, Kach Asura the Boel. Over there in the next section of the Mishnah, it defines the parties clearly. It calls them the Baal and the Boel. So why don't you use the same terms over here and call him the Boel? So, Olam the Boel. So then the Gemara says, no, it is the Boel. Aval, Reisha, Aide the Taniota, since in the Reisha it says her, Tanioto. Then it wrote after Tanioto, afterwards it wrote Oto, which is the parallel in the male form is Oto. Seif, Aide Tani Baal, since in the Seif it used the term Baal, Tani Boel. It uses Boel as the parallel word that's referencing the Boel. So in one case he's called the Oto. In one case, he's called the Boel. Depends on which party we're speaking about. We say Ota, then we use Oto. When we say the Baal, then we say the Boel. But the Oto and the Boel are the same individuals here. Now, what's important to note is that Rashi says, Deid Be'avon, that he has a sin. The sin that prevents him from having his wife checked by the water, according to Rashi, is Shaba Leha La'achar Shenistira. That he had Biyah with her after there was Kinui and Stira. So this is the sheet of Rashi and many of the Rishonim, that only a violation after the Kinui and Stira would then nullify or negate the effects of the Mesota, because he's got to have a clean slate when he's bringing his wife up to the Mikdash. We've spoken numerous times before about the sheet of the Rambam and the Ramban, that that's not the case. According to the Rambam, any Bi'ah Asura that the individual had, the man had, will prevent the Mesota from working, because if you want a miracle to happen and you want these waters to affect the woman, then the man himself has to have a completely clean slate in order to implicate his wife and have the waters perform this miracle. If he doesn't have a clean slate, he can't expect that Hashem's going to perform a miracle to do this to his wife. In addition to that, that might explain also what is the Gemara's Hava mean over here. What's the Gemara thinking when it says the Baal? It's the husband who's going to also be checked by the water. Why should the husband be checked by the water? Why is there even a inkling of a Hava Mino that that should be the case? The answer is, based on what we saw earlier in the Masechta on the first Perek, that the Gemara sees a parallel between the behavior of the woman and the behavior of the husband. And that the behavior of the husband in some way precipitates the behavior of the woman. And therefore, if the woman is behaving this way, in all likelihood, the man is also behaving this way. Or, if the man behaved poorly, then that's part of what precipitated the behavior of the woman. And so we see some sort of fault lying with the husband as well. And that might explain the Havamino of the Gemara over here. We also noted the Ramban on the Torah in the introduction to the Masechta, that the Ramban on the Torah there expands the concept of Sotah to say that when you say that the husband has to have a clean slate, it's not only that he has to have a clean slate, all of his children have to have clean slates. Whoever he's responsible for, he as the head of the household is responsible for the family. And if the family's behavior is problematic, then he's held accountable for that. The Gemara later on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Bet brings this same limud, and in that same limud over there, it has a much more expanded view of what it means that Vaish Nakimi Avon, and it quotes there the Psukim from Hosea, which we again discussed in the introduction to the Masechta, and in the Psukim that are quoted over there, V'chi Teima Avon Didei In Dibnei Ubnatei Lo, do you think it's only his sin, but that of his children doesn't count? Tashma. And then it goes on to quote the Psukim in Hosea, saying that the father's responsibility to have a clean slate here is not only about himself, but it's about all those parties that he is authority over, all these parties that he is responsible for. And then when we want, as the Ramban says there, you want this miracle to happen in this private miracle to happen in the Mikdash to implicate the woman, that's only going to happen if the man has a completely clean slate and he's made those efforts to keep his family in line. So the Rambam, and the Gemara later on in Mem Zayim seem to have a more expansive view of what it means that the husband has to have a clean slate. Over here, Rashi has a very narrow definition of what it means that the husband has to have a clean slate, which is simply Shabbala Elachar Shnistera. It all has to do with, from the point of Kinuyin Stira forward, the husband's behavior vis-a-vis his wife, and that's what matters in this instance. Right now, the Gemara continues, Shnemar Ubau Ubau. So in the Mishnah, we have the Limudim, one Limud, which is the way that the waters check her, they also check the Boel. And we have a second Limud about the fact that, just like she's a sur to the Baal, she's also a sur to the Boel. Ibailo, Bao Ubau Kamar, O Ubau Ubau Kamar. What is the Limud over here? Is the Limud from the duplication, the word repeated again within the parshia of Bau Bau, or is the limud from the vav, the extra vav that is there, uva'u? Tashma, the Gemara doesn't seem to know which one it is. So it goes on to the next limud, kashem shasura the bau, kacha sura the buel, shenemar nitme'a v'nitme'a. There it says, v'nitme'a v'nitme'a, that is the limud, v'dayin tibayi. Again there, you can ask the same exact question. What is the reasoning? Is it nitma'a, nitma'a kamar, that it's the duplication of the nitma'a, or nitma'a vinitma'a kamar, or is it the vav again that creates this limud? So tashma, mikdoni seifa, so this is, we mentioned when we did the Mishnah, the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua seems to shed light on the position of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Omer, shnei pi'amim amurim b'parsha, vinitma'a, vinitma'a. Because Rabbi Yeshua quotes Rabbi's position as being that the fact that it says twice in the Parsha the word nitma'a, from that he learns echad ba'al v'chad boel. Michlal, from that you can infer to Rabbi Akiva vavei tadarish, that Rabbi Akiva is doresh the extra vavim. Hilkach, the Rabbi Akiva, shita krai ktive. For Rabbi Akiva now, that means that there are six psukim that are written. That is because the word uva'u appears three times in the parsha. It appears when the kohen is taking the shvuah with her. It says, Vishbiya kohen et aisha, Vishvuat alav, Amar kohen lisha, Iten Hashem otach, Lala lushvuah betoch amech, Teit Hashem et yirechech nofelet, Vet bitnech tzaba, and then, uva'u amayim, Hamiarim, Haile, Bimayach, Litzpot batan, Velampil yorech, Vermah isha amein amein. So that pasuk says, pasuk chabet uva'u. So that is one ba'u plus the vav, the uva'u. Then, in the next section, when he's writing down the curses on the parchment to be erased, it says, v'katavet ala eile akoin basefer machal mei hamarim, v'ishkat eisha et mei hamarim ha-me'arim, uva'u va hamayim ha-me'arim le'marim. So again, the word ba'u appears, and it's uva'u with the vav. And then the final time that it appears is when they actually carry out the procedure, which is vishkata maim. Then he gives her to drink. Vayita im nitma v'timo mal b'isha uva uva maim amirim l'amirim v'tzavta bitna v'nafla yirecha v'yita isha l'ala b'kerev ama. So once again, uvo v'ahamayim. So the word bow now appears three times in the parsha. Each time it appears, it also has a vav in front of it, uvo. So for Rabbi Akiva, you have to explain why the word bow appears three times. But not only you have to explain why it appears three times, why is there a vav in front of it each time, uvo. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva has six things that he has to learn out of the appearance of the word bow three times, plus uvo. So he teaches us, chaditza va'adida, chaditza va'adidei. Chad de asi adida, v'chad de asi adidei. Chad de di adida, v'chad de di adidei. So what Rabbi Akiva says is, the necessity for the word uvo to appear three times in the parsha is to teach us three different aspects. One is the tzava'a, which means the command that the warders should carry out the mission that they're supposed to carry out. One is the asiya, is the actual application or the doing of the drinking and the waters going into her. And chad, the yidiyah. And one of them is informative to tell the woman what is going to happen. So as Rashi explains over here, the first two bow ba mayim amirim ha'ele b'mayayich litzpon batim elam pil yorech, then im isha answers, amen amen, that is the yidiyah. We're informing the woman how it's going to happen. Because in the Shvua it says, b'teit Hashem yirechech nofel b'pnech tzava, which is that first it'll be in the thighs, and then afterwards in the stomach. But we know that the water works the other way around, because she ingests the water, and it works the way that she ingests it. So that pasuk says, that's informing you how it's going to happen. That's called the yidiyah. The tzava'a is the command that the water should carry out their mission, and that is in the instructions to the kohen to write down the parsha in the on the parchment. And there it says, what will happen? And they will go into her. Meaning that it's a tzava, that the waters will do their job and do what they're supposed to do. The final appearance of Ba'u is the Asiya. It's when they give the woman to drink the waters. What's going to happen? The action, the activity that will happen. It's reporting to us what will happen. So those are the three different aspects of bow that appear in the parsha. Yidiyah, tzava'ah, asiyah. And what Rabbi Akiva says is, the extra vav teaches us that each one of those is not only applicable to the woman, but also applicable to the man. Which is chad tzava'ah dida, chad tzava'ah didei. That extra vav tells us that it applies to the boel as well. And just like it will happen or work this way to the woman, it will also work this way to the boel. And just like it's informing her how it will transpire, so too it's reporting to him how this will affect him, how the waters will affect him. And so therefore he has the six limudim, the three times the word ubo appears. The word bow itself teaches us these three different aspects. Uvo adds the additional three aspects of the boel to each of those differentiated perspectives. Virabi. Rabbi, who only learns out from the word bow and not for the word, from the vav there. Then, tlata krai ktive. There are only three psukim written. Chade tzava, chade asiya, vchade diya. So then, they have those three different aspects that we identified with regards to Rabbi Akiva, so too, Rabbi has those three different aspects. But then, V'Rabbi, Keshem Shemayim Bodkim Ota, Kach Bodkim Oto Minole. He doesn't have the extra vavs, he doesn't darshan the vavs, so then how does he know that the same thing will happen to the man as happens to the woman? Nafilei Minitanyu. He learns it out from this braita. It says in the parsha, Latzbot Baten V'Lanpil Yorech, Bidno V'Yerecho Shel Boel. That references to the stomach and the thighs of the boel, the perpetrator of the znut over here. Ata omer bitno v'yerecho shel boel. This is referring to the boel here, the partner in this znut. O'eino ela bitna v'yerecha shel nivelet. Maybe it's her stomach and her thighs that we're referencing over here. Kushu omer v'tzavta bitna v'nafla yirecha. When it says later on in the parsha v'tzavta bitna v'nafla yirecha, bitna v'yirecha shel nivelet amur. We already have her stomach and thighs mentioned. Umani mekayim litzbot boten v'lampil yarech. So then, what do I do with the letzbot beten v'lampil yarech? Bitnov yirecho shel boel teaches me about his beten. So now, part of this is the fact that it's extraneous, because the parsha later on tells us v'tzavta bitna v'nafla yirecha. So telling us over here, letzbot beten v'lampil yarech, is extraneous. The other thing to note, and this is important, that one of them is written in the male form, and one of them is written in the female form, which is v'tzavta bitna v'nafla yirecha is in the female form, and therefore it references to her. Latzbot beten v'lampil yarech is written in the male form, and therefore it refers to him. V'idach, what about Rabbi Akiva? He also has this, latzbot beten v'lampil yarech. How the modal akoin the beten bereisha v'hadar yarech. It's for what we said earlier back on Daf Tet, that the reason that the Parsha has to repeat the same thing it said before, just in a different order, is informative. The first time it's mentioned, it says, it'll first affect your thighs and then your stomach. That's because of the Midah Keneged Midah, which is that she started the Avera with her thighs and then it went to her stomach. So therefore, the punishment comes midah keneged midah. But then the Kohen informs her in the next pasuk that the way to really happen is litzbot beten v'lampil yarech. It'll start in the stomach and then affect the thighs, because that's the way she ingests the water, and that's how she'll be affected by it. So in order not to cast dispersions on the water, that it works properly, the Kohen informs her that it'll go through the stomach and then the thighs. We spoke back then about the unbelievable power of human beings to convince themselves that something's not happening because there's a slight alteration in the way that it happens. For instance, here, where the coin says this is going to happen to her, but instead of it going affecting her thighs and then her stomach, it affects her stomach, then her thighs, people then will dismiss it and say, it didn't really work. That wasn't what the waters were. That how people can talk themselves into anything. And therefore, the Torah says, tell them explicitly, this is how it's going to work. So that's why we need that information. V'idach. And Rabbi, in the way that he's brought by Rabbi Yeshua and our Mishnah, what does he do with the fact that you need to know this information? You have to inform the woman. Im kein lichtov krab bitna v'yerecha. You're right. But then the Torah does have to repeat it in order to give this information to the woman about how it's going to work. But then let it write it in the female form. Bitna v'yerecha. Ma beten v'yorech. How come it writes it in the male form? Shmamina la boel, that it affects the boel. Fema kulele hachihud ato. Let us say that all this, that's what it's coming for. It's coming for the boel, but not coming for the informative side. Imkein lechto bitno v'yerecho. If that was the case, it should specify in the possessive form his beten and his thighs. My beten v'yorech. How come it just states it as beten and yorech in the neutral form, not in a possessive form? Shmamina tarti. From that you can learn out two things. So the fact that it is in a male conjugation of beten and yorech, or doesn't really have a possessive form to it, we say it is applying to the boel. And the fact that it doesn't go to the male possessive form of bitno and yorecho teaches us the other piece of information, which is that he's informing the woman that it'll happen this way and not the way that it was said in the curse. So that's how we have all the information from these multiple manifestations of the word ubao, as well as from litzbot button v'lampil yorech, what we learn out from that. Now, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, kach haya doresh Zachariah ben HaKatzav, the way that Rabbi Akiva was doresh, that's the way that Zachariah ben HaKatzav was doresh. On the other hand, Rabbi used the words in multiple forms, which is nitma'a v'nitma'a, that appears a number of times. Tanu Banan, Shalosh pamim arim v'parsha im nitma'a, nitma'a v'nitma'a l'ma. Why does it written the word nitma'a three times in the parsha? We already noted that in the Mishnah. The Mishnah only notes that there are two. Rashi already asked the question, what about the third one? Rashi says, we already used the third one for a limud in the first parak of nistera v'hid nitma'a to tell us that one aid has the power to incriminate her, not for penalties or punishments, but to make her a surah the Baal. And so that we learned out of Vehi Nitma'a, that she's considered as if she definitely was defiled, even though she was Nistara, and that's because of the Eid Echad. We saw back then that Tosfot Chans disagreed. Part of his disagreement stems from the fact that here the Gemara acknowledges that there are three times the word Nitma'a, and each one of them is being darshaned over here by the Gemara. The first one appears in the introductory paragraph to the Sotah, which is Vavara Lav Ruach Kinah V'Kineh Tishto Behi Nitma'a. So that's one appearance of the word Nitma'a. The next one is in the, what called the Asiyah portion, where what's going to happen is described by the Torah. And there in Pasuk Chav Zayin says, V'ishkat ha'mayim v'ayta im nitme'a v'tmo mal b'isha ba'ba ha'mayim ha'merim narmim tzavta bitnam nafla yirecha v'ayta isha la'ala b'kerv ha'ma. So there is again, im nitme'a, that's the next one. And the final one is in the concluding psukim, the summary psukim to the parashiyah, which is Zot Torat HaKnaot, Asher Tiste Isha Tachad Isha V'Nitme'a. So that's the third appearance of the word Nitme'a. So now, the Gemara says, three times that the word appears, what do we need three of them for? Achad the Baal, want to tell us that the husband is restricted, like she is Tme'a, as if she is considered to be Tme'a, and he cannot interact with this woman anymore until she gets exonerated by the Meis Sota. Achad the Boel, just like the husband is a sur, so too the Boel is restricted over here. Ve'achad le'truma. And one of them is for truma, to tell us that if she's an Eshet Kohen or a Bat Kohen, she's now restricted in eating truma. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That is the view of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Kal v'chomer. It is a Kal v'chomer. Oma grusha shemuteret le'truma. A divorcee who is permitted to eat truma, meaning that if she goes back to her father's house after being divorced, she's allowed to eat truma from her father's house. Asura lekuna. Nevertheless, she may not marry a Kohen anymore because she is a grusha. That is one of the women that a Kohen is restricted from marrying, is a grusha. And since she's a grusha, she's restricted from the kuhuna. Despite a restriction to the kuhuna, she's still permitted to eat truma. Zo, shasura betruma. This woman over here, who's become restricted in truma, inu din shasura the kuhuna, certainly she should be restricted to the kuhuna. All right, so that's the end of the position of Rabbi Yishmael here in the Braita. Now, what's difficult, and which the Gemara will address at the end of today's daf, is Rabbi Kiva, who is the author of the first piece of this Braita, says that the appearance of the word nitma'a three times tells you echad boel, v'chad ba'al, v'chad truma. So now, Rabbi Akiva's position is clear here in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel all of a sudden comes along and says something which purportedly is arguing on Rabbi Akiva, but he's addressing something that Rabbi Akiva never said. In addition to that, it says, Omar Rabbi Shmuel. Usually when you have a machloket in a bright or in a Mishnah and you quote the second Tana, it will say that the second Tana, Omer or Amar. It's the name, then the Omer afterwards. Amar usually means the beginning of a new statement. It's not an argument on the previous statement. The fact that the Gemara says Amar Rabbi Shmuel over here is also somewhat strange, which indicating that he's not necessarily arguing Rabbi Akiva, but adding to Rabbi Akiva. And so that only compounds the problem here. What is Rabbi Shmuel saying to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is talking about Truma, Baal, and Boel. And Rabbi Shmuel is coming here about Isser Kuhuna, which Rabbi Akiva never mentioned. So the Gemara is going to get sidetracked now, dealing with the Limudim here. It will come back later and explain or try to understand what transpired here in this conversation between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So now, according to Rashi, the Gemara now, Matal Madomar, is what he calls Milta Ba'anpe Nafshahi. It is not a continuation of the statements before, but an independent statement. And now, will we be a new Braita? And then from that Braita, we're going to try to understand more deeply what's happening here. Matamalomar vihi nitma'a, vihi lo nitma'a. What does the Pasuk say that whether she is found to be defiled, or she's found not to have been defiled, right? Those are the Psukim, aitaim nitma'a. And then the later Pasuk says, vihim lo nitma'a isha. So, im nitma'a, lama shota. If she was defiled, and she did have this extramarital affair, then why is she drinking? We know that she's guilty. Im lo nitma'a, if she's innocent, Lama mashkeh? Then why is the husband given the right to give her to drink if she's innocent? Magid lecha katuv, shasafek asura. It's obvious here that we don't have certitude with regards to what happened. We don't know for sure she was defiled, or we don't know for sure that she was innocent. Rather, we have a safek. Despite the fact that we have a safek, the Torah deems her to be asura, as if we know for certain. So from this, we're going to learn a paradigm, which is that when you have a safek, we're going to assume it is asura. Mikanat adam the sheretz. From here, you can extrapolate this din to a case of sheretz. Uma sutash lo asaba shugeg kemezid bonus kiratzon. By a suta, where we do not equate shugeg kemezid or ratzon keonis, meaning that if it was unintentional, this extramarital affair, as Rashi explains, that there were two women in the house, and she thought it was her husband, and he thought it was his wife, and they got mixed up, so there was a shugeg, or a case of onus, if she's raped, then she's not subject to the parsha of suta, it wasn't her fault. So in the case of Sota, we distinguish between Shogeg versus Mezid, and Onis versus Ratzon. But nevertheless, Asapa Safek Kivadai. Nevertheless, in this instance, we make a case where we're uncertain into a case of certainty. We're not certain if she was defiled, yet we treat her as if she is, quote-unquote, guilty. Sheretz, Shasabo Shogeg Kemezid, Onis Kiratzon. When it comes to a Sheretz, it doesn't matter how the sherets came to contact with the object or the tarot or the individual, they will become tamei, no matter how that came about. Then certainly, if there's a safek with regards to tumat sherets, we should treat it like a vadai, like a certainty that it is considered to be tamei. The Gemara says, well, if that is the kavachomer or sota becomes the paradigm, then you have to look at the features of that paradigm in order to apply it to other cases. When kom shabata, ma suta reshuti yachid, av sheretz reshuti yachid. Just like suta is only applicable in a case of reshuti yachid, because a reshuti yachid is a place of seclusion, and the whole problem here is that she's secluded with an individual. So just like by suta, this whole din of a safek looking like a badai is only true in the reshuti yachid, so too by the tumata sheretz, it will only be true in the reshut ha-yachid. Uma sota, devar sheish bo dat li she'el. And just like by sota, the purported perpetrators of the znut over here can be asked whether they did the crime or not, or whether they did what was wrong. Here, you can ask the woman, did she have znut? You can ask the boel, did he have znut? You can query them, and they can respond. Doesn't mean they're going to tell the truth, but at least you can ask them. So too, av sheretz, davar sheish bo dat li she'el. In the case of a sheretz, it must be a case where you can query and get information. You may not get the information, you may not know, but there has to be the possibility of querying for such information. Umikan amru. So from here we conclude, or this is the extrapolation, davar sheish bo dat li she'el b'shutei achid, in a case where it's a tuma that has the ability to be asked about the tuma. Now, who has to be asked and who has to have the ability to answer is not clear. In our case, it's both parties. The woman and the boel both have the ability to answer. So if you really use that paradigm, you might have to require that both sides have the ability to respond. On the other hand, you can see from Rashi, kagon adam otarot, shehi adam asuk bahem b'shah shenolad asafek. So the question of whether it's an individual became tamei, because he can be asked about it, or whether it's an adam who's working with tarot, and he can be asked whether the sheretz came into contact or not. So Rashi has a slightly broader definition of a dat li she'el is, if there's any party here that can be asked information. If it all happened out of sight of anyone, for instance, where you have a sheretz in the area, and it's laying there near the tarot, we wonder whether it did touch the tarot, or didn't touch the tarot, over there there's nobody to ask, because there's nobody present, there's nobody involved, and therefore there's ain dat li she'el. So in that case, it would not have this din. And still others, like the Rambam, believe that the dat li she'el has to be in the mekabel tuma. The recipient of the tuma must be the one that can be asked about it. Can't be that any party can be asked, and that's sufficient grounds for it. It has to be the party that is becoming tamei, or is affected by the tuma, that can be the one that can be asked. As well as b'shutei yachid, it has to be in the private domain, sfeikol tamei. If we have uncertainty, the uncertainty leads us to believe that you are tamei. Bershut Rabim. On the other hand, if it is in the public domain, then Sveikot Tahor. Because just like Sotah does not apply in the Rishut Rabim, so too by the Sheretz, if a Safek arises in the Rishut Rabim, we will deem them to be Tahor. And if they don't have the ability to respond, then Ben Birshut Achid, Ben Birshut Rabim, doesn't matter if you're in the private domain, public domain, Sveiko, Tahor. In that case, the Safek is deemed to be Tahor, and this is what's otherwise known as the principle that we see throughout Shas, Safek Tumah Birshut Yachid. If you have a doubt about Tumah in the private domain, Sveiko Tameh, then it's considered to be Tameh. Safek Tumah Birshut Rabim. If you have an uncertainty as to Tumah in a public domain, Sveiko Tahor. In that case, the Safek is deemed to be Tahor. And that's the way we deal with Safek Tumah, based on the paradigm of Sota. So here, Tosfot raises a number of questions that make this problematic and that have to be dealt with. The first of which is, the Gemara here now concludes that Safek here be deemed Tamei in the case of Sota. Don't we have a general principle in the Torah? Sveika d'oraita l'chumra. If you have a safek in a Torah law, then we go l'chumra. Then we always go l'chumra. So what do I need all of these limudim of all of this to teach me that safek tamei is tamei? Well, safek tamei is tamei because sveika d'oraita is l'chumra. So then Tosfot over here says, l'olam emashkim ala safek v'im tomar v'chi yitzrich kra l'meisar sveika. Do you need a pasuk to teach you that a safek is asur? Yesh lamar ha-katuv usra kodem shtia kihilu hi vadai va'af agav deleke malkot. The pasuk deems her prior her to her drinking as if she is a vadai tmeya. When you say sfeika or safek d'oraita l'chumra, which the Balei HaTosafot believe is a din d'oraita, that's safek d'oraita l'chumra, is a din min haTorah, and that's the reason for their question over here. Why do I need this whole din of safek? Because safek d'oraita is the chumra. According to others, like Rambam, who seems to think that safek d'oraita the chumra is a din d'rabbanan, so then you don't have a question, because that's only a din d'rabbanan that you go to the chumra. Here, the Torah is telling you that she is tamei midoraita. So that here becomes a safek midoraita that is deemed to be tamei. Otherwise, it's just a din d'rabbanan. But the Tosafot who believe that sveika d'oraita is the chumra is a din d'oraita, they have a problem now. Why do I need a pasuk here at all if that's the natural way that you would have viewed this situation? The answer is that we treat her like a vadai. When you say safek d'oraita is the chumra, it's still a safek. There's uncertainty here. We don't treat the person as if it is absolutely this way. We say this is a fake, but the hachra'ah, the din, the way that we have to halachically approach this is the chumra, is to make a decision to go to chumra. So this won't tell us the way to treat the individual. It simply tells us how we halachically deal with such a situation of safek. On the other hand, over here, when we say that the safek is deemed to be vadai, that is, we treat her as if she is vadai tmeya. We give her all of the trappings as if a woman who was defiled and did have znut, even though we don't know it. She's asur to her husband. She's asur to the boel. She's asura b'tuma. All of those things apply to her because we treat her like a vadai. Not because of a chumrah, but because she's treated like a vadai. And that's the nature of the parsha of Sota. As we know from the earlier prakim, the way that she's treated, the way that she's handled in the Mikdash, is in a way that is pretty rough and embarrassing, and we're treating her as if she's assumed to be guilty. That would not be enough to say sfeika d'oraita l'chumrah to do this. The only way you could do that is if the sfeik is deemed like a vadai, and that's what Tosafot suggests over here, that even though there's no makot for this, we'd still treat her as if she definitely violated the Isur because of the kinui and stira that took place. And therefore the husband, if he has bi'ah with this woman, he will be punished for that because he's violating this Isur. She is treated as if she is vadai tmeah. And since she's treated like vadai tmeah, if the husband then engages and has bi'ah with her, he'll be held accountable for that bi'ah. What violation does he have when he has bi'ah with her? So Tosfot says over here, "Vafilim hi Torah." Even in the end, if she's found to be innocent, "Nenash bebeitin shamalo in balea." If the husband in the interim had bi'ah with her, he will be punished in the heavenly courts. "Kamol chayvei asay," like anybody gets punished for violating a positive commandment. So even though in the end she's deemed to be Torah, that doesn't change the fact that in the interim period she was considered to be vadai tmeya, and therefore if he has bia with her, he's going to be held accountable for that. Velo kishat sfeikot. Not like any other safek gon, safek chelev, safek shuman. What happens if you have a safek, whether it's mutar fat or asur fat? And then he eats it, and he doesn't know which one it is. And then later on, we find out that it was the kosher fats. So, afagav tzrich kapara slicha, mi olo chamir kechai v'yasei. Even though he needs some sort of kapara, because he entered himself into the safek, he didn't know, and he didn't clarify the situation. So he needs some kapara slicha, but it won't be as if he violated a mitzvah asei or a lav, because he ate it. Because in the end, we find out that he was innocent, that he ate the right thing, and it was fine. Over here, even if you find out that she was innocent, you still are held accountable in the interim as if she was guilty. And that's the power of the safek being like a vadai here. Again, Tosafot says that the violation of the husband getting together with the wife during the period that she is after kinui b'stira, before she does the shtiat mei sota, is a violation of asei. We saw earlier in the Masechta when we discussed this that there are multiple views within the Rishonim as to what is the isur that was violated over here. Tosafot believed that it was an asei. Others believe that it is a lav that she is violating. Others suggest an isur asei, or they, others learn it directly from the normal circumstance of a woman who has znut, where she's asura, since the Torah deems her to be as if she is a mizana, then she also gets the din of a mizana, and therefore just like you're not, the husband is not allowed to return to his wife. In a regular case of znut, that isur would apply over here, even though here it's only a safek. So you have multiple views within the Rishonim, but Tosfot's view is that it's an asei. But he says it's an asei, even if the woman is found to be innocent after the fact. The next question that Tosfot raises is with regards to the Gemara's Kal Vachomer that it learns from Sota to Sheretz. And he says that this is a very difficult limud, because aval ha'ika l'mitama. You have to wonder about this. Amaylo parchinan, malo sotash, kein raglaim le davar. Sherei kinei la v'nistera. What happened to the fact that sota, maybe the reason safek is kivadai, is because there's circumstantial evidence that leads us to believe that the woman is guilty over here. There is raglaim le davar. And that is maybe what makes it problematic, is that there is raglaim le davar. The Tosfot Shantz asks the same thing. So Tosfot answers over here, the Yesh Lomar, the Stira Yedei Knuya B'Sotah because Safek Magash Eretz, that the Raglaim the Davar would not undermine the Kal Vachomer here, because Stirat HaSotah is exactly like a Safek and Sheretz. And that is because without Kinui, the Stira itself is not problematic. The fact that a woman secludes with another man is not an automatic assumption that something went bad or something went wrong there. Just because she had Yichud, Lo nechshedu al arayot. We don't automatically assume that there was also problematic activity there and that there was arayot over there. Therefore, the kinoi, the statement by the husband, is what generates the safek over here. The whole reason that the stira takes on added meaning, or it's not deemed to be like a regular case of yichud, is because of the kinoi that preceded it. So it's not the problem of raglaim ledavar, but it's the fact that the kinoi comes along. That's what brings us to the point that there's a safek. The kinui makes the stira, which otherwise would have been not fine, because you're not supposed to do it, but it would not have aroused any suspicions regarding this woman. Now with the preemptive kinui by the husband, this stira now turns into something innocuous, into something that becomes a safek. So the kinui generates the safek, the same way that in the case of Sheretz, whatever transpired there creates a safek. And those sfeikot are equal. And therefore, raglaim the davar is not really a factor here, because the stira itself is not problematic. It's the kinui. And so it's that one item of the kinui that creates the safek. And that creating of the safek is similar to the safek by the sheretz. That's how Tosafot deals with it. There are the Tosafot Shantz, on the other hand, gives two answers. He says, one possibility is, benira zain kal v'chomer gamur. This is not a real kal v'chomer. Ela giloi milta bi'amuhu. It's just giving us an indication of what the halacha is. We're not going to learn the Kal Vachomer literally and then look at it as a pure logical argument that we learn Sheretz from Sota, because there are ways to undermine that Kal Vachomer. Like we just said, that Sota has a raglaim ledavar. Since it can be undermined, all it's doing is showing us that this is the way the limud's going to go. Sheretz will be learned from Sota. We formulate it as a Kal Vachomer, but that's not the whole reason. That's not the real reason behind it. but it's just a gilui milta. It's a way to show us that that is the direction of this limud, of this halacha. So as opposed to the Tosfot's answer over here, the Tosfot Shatz suggests, along the lines of the Rabbeinu Tam Shita and other places, that this whole din is really halach ilchota gemira lo. It's really halach lemosh misinai, and the Kal v'chomer is simply a gilui milta to tell us that's the direction of the limud, but not that the limud really derives from this Kal v'chomer, this logical argument, because there is a failing in this logical argument because of the problem of raglaim ledavar with regards to the sota. Then Tosfot goes on to ask a number of other questions, which are, number one, why is it that Safek Tumah B'Rishut HaRabim is Tahor? Why do we need to learn that out of Sota? And that he brings from the Gemara in Chulin, the Gemara in Avot Sarah, that says, Safek Tumah B'Rishut HaRabim, Hilchata Gemir La Misota. It's Allah HaLamosh Misinai Misota. Demashma Dafka B'Makom Stira Tameh. Ava Shalom Makom Stira Gemirei. But in a place that's not secluded, we learn out that Tahor Vadayu B'Tema. What do I need halacha l'moshe misinai for? In general, people have a chezkat tahara. Since they have a chezkat tahara, that chazokah should stand them in good stead. And that means that unless I have contrary evidence, we will believe that the individual is tahor. And Tosfot brings examples like that, that we assume an individual or person is tahor, unless we have something that arouses suspicion or brings up a safek. Beish lamar, ilav hilchotah gamina de b'shut haramim tahor, havamina stira de nakat kra, lo diber akatuv ela bahuveh. The answer is somewhat along the lines of what you're saying, is the fact that the Torah here requires stira, meaning in the private domain, we would have assumed that that's just the normal way that these things happen. Stira normally happens in the private domain. It wouldn't happen in the public domain, but that's just because that's the normal way that it happens. V'sagadatzla d'gzeret ha-melech kachi, b'chol safek tuma. So then we would think that in any case of safek tuma, that means that, okay, the case of sota has to be in reshut ha-yachid, because we need stira. But that's just because that's the nature of the case, or the nature of the situation. But that doesn't mean that safek tuma reshut ha-rabim is not tamei. Any safek tuma is tamei. For the sota, the particulars of the case require that it be b'shut yachid. So I would have had a havamina that safek tuma, no matter where it is tamei. Along comes the hilkach extra hilchata. Therefore, I need halacha l'moshe misinai. That means safek tuma b'shut rabim achez kata. To say no, treat the safek b'shut rabim like the normal cases of chazaka, and she will be tahor. Lo machtin le tuma misafek, that we don't grant it tuma misafek. So what Tosafot says is without the halacha of the Moshe Misinai, or without this limud that safek tumah b'shut rabim is tahor, we would have assumed otherwise, which is that the din of sota tells us safek tumah is tamei, irrespective of where it's found, whether it's reshut yachid, reshut rabim. Ah, sota is in reshut yachid. That's diber hakatuv be'oveh. That's the normal case. That's where sota has to take place. But because sota has to take place there, that's the only reason that it's in the reshut yachid here. But that doesn't mean that the din is limited to the reshut yachid. It might apply more broadly. Along comes the tzad of halacha l'moshe misinai to teach us that just by sota, just like it's tahor, so too by other cases it will also be tahor, and the chazaka will prevail. So that's how Tosfot expresses it. Or Tosfot, in one location, answers that the safek tara b'shut rabim applies even when there's no chezka tara. And that's what we learn from the case of sota. In Ochanama, you don't need sota for safek tumah b'shut rabim is tahor in a normal case. But in a case where you're lacking chezka tara, that's the chiddush that sota teaches us, that a safek tumah b'shut rabim is tahor. The Tosfot Shatz, on the other hand, expresses it that v'adi yafina misota ino safek tumah b'shut yachid, t'chol safek tumah b'shut rabim sfeko tahor, lo gamirina. So then, what the Tosfot Shatz suggests over here is that the only limud from sota is that safek tumah b'shut yachid is tamei. That's what we learn out of sota. The fact that safek tumah b'shut rabim is tehora, that's a natural. That would be your natural inkling. That would be the natural way to learn it because of the chezka tahara. The only thing sota teaches you is that safek tumah b'shut yachid is tamei, not that safek tumah b'shut rabim is tahor. And interestingly enough, Tosfot himself, where he quotes this Gemara from Chulin and Avodah Zarah, has different approaches. In one instance, he says, similar to what the Tosfot Shatz says over here, that Eino Chanami, that Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is not learned from Sota. That is the natural stance. What we learn from Sota is that Safek Tumah Bereshut HaYachid is Tamei, and as opposed to that Tumah Bereshut HaYachid, Bereshut HaRabim has the normal din, that Chezkat Tara prevails, and that is Torah, similar to what the Tosfot Shas says over here. So if the din of Sota doesn't apply there, then how could you learn from Sota the din of Tara or Tahor there? So because of that, mostly more favorably towards the side of Tosafot that says that we don't learn out Sveiko Tahor Bereshut HaRabim from Sota, but rather we learn it out either from Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai, or we learn it because that would have been the natural stance over here, but not necessarily because it comes out of Sota. Again, Tosafot over here gives you a reason why you would need Halacha from Sota, and that you wouldn't naturally lean or gravitate towards Hemed Tahor B'chezkato. But again, we saw in the Tosfot Shas and others that describe it otherwise. That they are within the Rishonim, that the Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is Tahor, is not learned from Sota, is bolstered by the approach of the Rambam and many other Rishonim that say that we learn out Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is Tahor from Korban HaPesach. Because there by Korban HaPesach, where you can have the majority of Bnei Yisrael be Tamei, but because it's the public at large, therefore it's deemed to be Tahor, and they bring a Korban Pesach b'tum'ah, that is how we know that Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is Tahor. Tosfot quotes that same reasoning from the Yerushalmi, and then adds in an additional opinion from the Yerushalmi that the reason Safek Bereshut HaRabim Tahor, mipnei she'efshar lishael liyachid, because you can ask an individual for information, but in Bereshut HaRabim it's Tahor, because he'efshar lishael rabim. Because you can't query of the public in general. You can only ask particular people. If you're looking at the public in general, then we're not going to have Datol Yishael, and that's a failure here in terms of Bereshut HaRabim. According to that answer, then the reason the Gemara says Safek Bereshut HaRabim Tahor is from Sota is because it is learnt out from Sota. According to those that think it is not learnt out of Sota, whether it's learnt out of the fact that Korban HaPesach teaches us that din, or it's some sort of Hamid Tahor b'chezkato, how do you then explain the fact that the Gemara here says Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim Tahor is learned out of Sota? So what you have to say is, the fact that Safek Tumah Bereshut HaYachid is Tamei by Sota implies that Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is Tahor. And since we learn out that Sad through an implication, that if it's Bereshut HaYachid it's Tamei, Bereshut HaRabim it is Tahor, that's how we then can extrapolate from Safek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is Tahor from Sota. The last thing Tosfot deals with is, what is the definition of Bereshut HaRabim over here? He asked it based on actually a Gemara that we saw together in Nazir, where the Gemara there discusses the fact that you have a Safek Tumah, and the Safek Tumah is a case where two Nazirim are there, and an individual witnesses them becoming Tamei. He says, I saw one of you become Tamei. So the Gemara there in Nazir asks, well, why should it be a Safek Tumah that is Tamei over here? Because it is considered to be Bereshut HaRabim. You have three individuals there. You have the two Nazirim, plus the person that witnessed it, that makes it three people. And three people should be considered a Bereshut HaRabim, because in a case of Sota, the Bereshut HaYachid is seclusion of the woman and the Boel. So two is a case of Stira. Three makes it that it is considered to be no longer a Bereshut HaYachid, but rather a Bereshut HaRabim. So Tosfot then is plagued with numerous questions throughout Shas, where it seems that we have more than one individual, or we're considered to be in an area that is a Bereshut HaRabim, yet we still say Sveiko Tamei. So Tosfot over here says, Nira de lo chashvin en Tumah Bereshut HaRabim, this din of Tumah Bereshut HaRabim is only relevant, hela de hecha de sveika ita yachol liot gluya lakol. It's only when the case or the Safek is apparent to everyone who's there. Kugon de Hayid Nazir. Like the case of Nazir that we just mentioned, where the Tumah happened in everybody's eyesight. Somebody could have seen the Tumah touching the Nazir. It's something that's available in public to everyone. Betisha Sfardim, Misheretz Achad Benehem, or the case where you have nine Sfardeya and one Sheretz, which is Tameh, and then we're not certain as to what happened or what touched what. Aval Hayid Nida. In cases of Nida, where again, if you have three people involved there, we still say that the Safek Nida is Le Tumah. How come over there we say Safek Nida Le Tumah? Because Han Maga Vadaihu Shenaga B'mita. In that case, we know that the Nida touched the bed for sure. V'en Shum Safek Alim Rata Olo. And the only question is, did she see Damnida or did she not see Damnida? Omekom amakor, mekom seteru. And her womb is an area that is not open for viewing, or we cannot see or determine when the blood exited the womb that would make her tamei. V'lo shach lemeimar be'ui reshut harabim. Therefore, the din of reshut harabim does not apply at all. Afilim in olad safek riyata reshut harabim. Even if the safek arises in a location or a situation which is deemed to be reshut harabim, that's still not going to help you over here in cases of tuma'ah that are not really subject to reshut harabim. Tumah that is subject to reshut harabim means that it's tumah that is available and visible to anybody who's in that venue. So if in that venue it would be possible to see how the tumah happened or how the activity transpired, then it's considered to be tumah reshut harabim. But if you have a manifestation of tumah in reshut harabim, just because you're in reshut harabim doesn't make it tumah of reshut harabim, because the tumah is tumah that is not available or visible, like the instance of a nida. A nida, when she becomes a nida, nobody knows that. That's not information that's available to the public. The fact, the mere fact that she's out in the public domain doesn't change the fact that the tumah is b'makom seter, and it does not, it's not governed by tumah b'reshut harabim. The Minchat Chinuch over here asks on the Rambam who says here that if a individual, a husband, warns his wife not to be soteret with a number of men, says, I don't want you secluding with these individuals, with these number of men, then even if she goes in and does the stira with these individuals, it's a problematic stira, and that will make her a surah to her husband, and that she can drink the mei sota. So Minchat Chinuch asked the question based on what we're saying here, how can that be considered stira? If the stira sota is a case between the boel and the woman, if this individual, the husband, gives a warning, don't seclude with so-and-so and so-and-so, and then she secludes with them, then you have three parties there, it should be deemed a reshut harabim. So why is it that over there we consider it to be stira according to the Rambam? So the Minchat Chinuch, using this logic of Tosafot, answers that question on the Rambam. How is it possible that the Rambam considered that a reshut yachid if it's more than one person there? If more than one person there, then it becomes a reshut harabim. So the answer is based on the Tosfot here that the definition here of reshut harabim is not your classic definition of reshut harabim. Reshut harabim here is only when the safek or the tumah is in a public area or in a domain where it's visible to all, or it's clear to all what had, if they were there, they could have determined what it was. But in a case where the whole issue takes place in a private setting, where that setting would only be determined by the individuals who are there, but cannot be known by anyone else, then it's not considered to be tumah b'reshut harabim, despite the fact that there's more than one person there. Just like the nida. Even though she's in a public domain, that doesn't make it tumah b'reshut harabim, because nobody can really know, and even though there is a possibility, it's only the woman herself that could know. And since the act here is an act that is perpetrated in private, even though there are a number of individuals there in this stira, but because of the nature of the act being a private act, it's not subject to this rule of reshut harabim when the stira happens in such a manner. Obviously, you could reject that logic in the case of sota, because there's a possibility, even though the bi'a itself is makom seter, we still have the idea that there are edim with regards to bi'a, and if that there are other parties present, they can be witnesses, or they can't give evidence to the fact that bi'a did transpire. And therefore, maybe that should be deemed a reshut harabim, even though the bi'a itself is makom seter. Nevertheless, the presence of other individuals gives us evidence of the fact that there was bi'a there, and they can have the knowledge that there was bi'a that transpired. So based on this Tosfot, this the Minchat Chinuch explains that shita in the Rambam. So now, the Gemara then moves back to the question about what was the conversation between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Where it says, Rabbi Shmuel, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Truma. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva says to him, look, Truma is a surah. Umahadale, iu kuna. And he tells him, you know what? Kuna is a surah through a Kal v'chomer. What does it have to do with what Rabbi Akiva said? Vitu. Rabbi Akiva, kuna, minale. And here, besides that, how does Rabbi Akiva, who doesn't learn the Kal v'chomer of Rabbi Shmuel, where does he know kahuna from? He's using the pasuk for truma. Where does he know kahuna from? As Tosfot notes over here, the Gemara's assumption is that Rabbi Akiva is not learning the Kal V'Chomer of Rabbi Shmuel. Because the Gemara is assuming, even though, again, as we pointed out by the Brayt, it's not obvious that Rabbi Shmuel is arguing with Rabbi Akiva, nevertheless, the Gemara believed that that was the case, and therefore, they don't say that Rabbi Akiva just uses the Kal V'Chomer of Rabbi Shmuel, but rather Rabbi Shmuel is expressing an opinion that Rabbi Akiva doesn't have, and because of that, now we have to find a solution for Rabbi Akiva. As Rashi explains here, Perish to Kal V'Chomer lo leyo, if him tkein hainu Rabbi Shmuel. Because if he learned the Kal V'Chomer, then he's the same as Rabbi Shmuel. Betema, ilile Kal V'Chomer the Rabbi Shmuel and Cain, given shinivala psula, bilava da'it, manale de psula de kuna. He doesn't have the Kal V'Chomer of Rabbi Shmuel. So the nature of the question, according to Tosfot, is not like Rashi suggests over here, which is that Rabbi Akiva obviously can't be like Rabbi Shmuel, but rather, we know we have three psukim over here and three limudim over here. What tells you that the limud should be for truma, not kuhuna? Because the Kal V'Chomer would push you in the other direction and tell you to include kuhuna and not truma. And so based on the Kal V'Chomer, you would have thought that kuhuna is the first thing that should be excluded from the pasuk and not truma. And so why did Rabbi Akiva pick truma to exclude from the pasuk? So Gemara answers here, V'tu Rabbi Akiva kuhuna min alei v'chitem kuhuna lo tzricha kro. If you tell me you don't need kuhuna, you don't need from the pasuk, you know why? Because when we said before, the sota, even though she's a safek zona, we deem her to be as if she is a real zona. Well, she's a real zona, then she's a surah de kuhuna. So the fact that we deem her a real zona, maybe that's enough of a reason to say she's a surah de kuhuna. Where I said, well, that's the case. Truma nami loti boy. Rod shouldn't need a pasuk. Then you don't need the truma to be a surah in the pasuk. If you're making her into a real zona, that would preclude her from truma. Forget about safek zona kizona. Forget about the explicit pasuk telling us truma's a surah. She's a surah because we're deeming her as if she's a real zona, even though she's a safek zona. So that's the case. You wouldn't need the pasuk for a truma as well. So if you don't need the pasuk for a kuhuna, you don't need it for truma. So that can't be the solution to the problem. So Tosfot points out in the end, so even though we really do believe here that safek zona kizona, because that's what we started out in the Gemara, that Sota teaches us that when you're in a safek, we treat you like a vadai. That's only the gabe, the baal, and the boel. That's only regards to those issues that he calls are the serious issues, which are chayve mitot beitin. There we deem it that safek zonah kezonah. But when it comes to truma and kuhuna, which aren't as stringent or serious infractions, over there we say helkem isha chazkata. We leave the woman on her chazakah, which would mean that she's otherwise muteret b'truma, muteret b'kuhuna, and that's why we need specific psukim or limudim to make her asura. So even though, yes, in the end we do say safek zona kezona, it's not strong enough, that position, in order to incorporate within it kuhuna and truma, and that's why we need the psukim or the limudim over here to include truma and kuhuna in that isur. Ella, Rabbi Akiva arba'a kroy ketiveh. There are four psukim written over here. V'chad the baal, v'chad the boel, v'chad the kuna, v'chad the truma. And that is because the word nitma'a appears three times, as we already noted in the Braita. But in one of those instances, the last time it says vin nitma'a, it has a vav. And we know that Rabbi Akiva is doresh, the vav. So therefore right now he has four limudim. From those four limudim, he learns out three of which are in the Braita, v'chad the baal, the boel, and truma. And the additional item allows to learn out kuna. Rabbi Shmuel, Tlatakrai Ktivei. On the other hand, for Rabbi Shmuel, there are only three psukim, because he's not Doresh Devav. And therefore, Chad the Boel, Chad the Baal, Chad the Truma, and Kuhuna, Atya, B'Kal V'Chomer. And then he learns out Kuhuna through a Kal V'Chomer. Okay, we're going to stop here. Obviously, the question now is, according to Rabbi Shmuel, how did he know when he had the three psukim to put in Truma, not Kuhuna? He said, okay, one for the Baal, one for the Boel. That makes a lot of sense. Truma will put in. If you put truma in, then you get a Kal V'Chomer to kuhuna. Why don't you do the other way around? Why don't you say kuhuna is restricted by the pasuk, and truma is not affected at all? And maybe truma is muteret. So that'll be the Gemara's question when we continue tomorrow. But for right now, we're going to stop here. Seven lines down on the top of Chavtet Amud Aleph, with this explanation of the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, that Rabbi Akiva is able to learn it out from the psukim, everything, because he has four limudim, three from the word nitma'a and one from the extra vav of vid nitma'a. Rabbi Shmuel only has three psukim available, and that's why he learns baal, boel, truma, and then he has the Kal V'Chomer to learn out kuhuna, whereas Rabbi Akiva has the pasuk, and that's the argument here. How do we know she's a Asura l'Kuna? According to Rabbi Kiva, it's from the Pasuk. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's from a Kal V'Chomer. Okay, we'll stop over here.